And welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. Joining us on the line from Albuquerque, New Mexico, the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. And Mickey, listeners will have noticed that we are mixing up the music for the show. This is an Albuquerque band that you are quite familiar with, the Surf Lords. Last time out, we played Old Mexico. This time, Shark Attack. These guys are pretty good.
They're pretty good. They're friends of mine, and we're going to feature their songs for quite a while now. They've got four CDs, and we'll work our way through a bunch of that music. But speaking of shark attacks, today I'm going to lead a shark attack on the practicality and the technology and the politics of a hydrogen economy.
Okay, that is our focus, the hydrogen economy. It's, I guess basically, Mickey, it's a vision of using hydrogen as a low-carbon energy source. When did this idea first surface?
Well, the concept was first proposed by a really smart man, although he was a socialist and a Marxist, J.B.S. Haldane, and he was a British guy. He was a contemporary of Huxley and some other deep thinkers in the, say, the early to mid-20th century, biologist, and he proposed this in the mid-1900s.
And we're basically talking about moving away from what we have now today, which is a hydrocarbon economy, correct?
Well, that's true, and the term the hydrogen economy was first proposed, I think, by a guy at GM in 1970. His name was John Bokris, and it kind of went by the wayside and renewed interest in the 2000s. There was some work done at the University of Michigan, research work, and then there was a book that came out in 2002 by a guy named Jeremy Rifkin, and he's
right.
One of these kind of green environmentalist sort of guys that would be a successor, if you will, of guys like Ehrlich and Commoner, who wrote things like The Population Bomb and The Limits to Growth, if you remember the Club of Rome from the early 70s. So he was one of these guys, of this ilk, and then it really kind of got going in the United States when the Republicans got onto it in 2003, and Little Bush pushed this during his State of the Union address.
Well, I saw one article, Mickey, which quoted television actor and, quote, hydrogen champion Dennis Weaver. Do you remember him from that show, McLeod?
I remember him as Chester on Gunsmoke,
okay.
You know, the guy that limped around.
Yeah, well, apparently, I guess at one time, he piloted a hydrogen-powered car from coast to coast in the U.S., proclaiming hydrogen was the fuel of the future. Here's a quote from him. If we had a hydrogen economy worldwide, every nation on Earth would create its own energy source to support its economy. The threat of war over diminishing resources would just evaporate. Now, I guess the idea of a hydrogen economy sounds great, but it's rather utopian-like, isn't it?
Well, it is, but, you know, for a vehicle, a hydrogen-fueled engine, an internal combustion engine called an auto cycle, is actually more efficient than a gasoline motor. The problem is hydrogen has to be separated before it's an energy source. So you've got to use energy to make hydrogen, which is then can be used either in a fuel cell or an internal combustion engine, and that energy takes a lot of energy, and it's really not efficient. Hydrogen production, you know, as you mentioned last show, now these figures are from 10 or 11 years ago. There was 57 million tons of hydrogen produced in the year 2004, and that's worth about $135 billion now.
Yeah.
This is a major industry and growing at about 10% per annum, so do the math and see what it is right now. Mainly used, as we discussed before, to make ammonia, which is used for fertilizer mainly and for cracking hydrocarbons, but we do have hydrogen produced on that. Current breakdown, 48% of the hydrogen comes from nat gas, about 30% from oil, 18% from coal, and only 4% from electrolysis of water. So, you know, we're still burning hydrocarbons to generate hydrogen.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, you mentioned, 30% oil, 18% coal. It almost defeats the purpose, doesn't it?
Well, and only that, 48% natural gas. So, you know, that's, 96% hydrogen production comes from processing of hydrocarbons. So, you know, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. And there's various reasons that we can go into if you would like.
Okay, well, let's start running down some of those reasons. And I want to begin on the political front. How politically charged is this topic today?
Well, it's quite politically charged, and it always has been politically charged since the Republicans first proposed this in the early 2000s, and then you had Obama come in the late 2000s and completely turn things around with his proposal for electric vehicles, et cetera. And really, this is about vehicles on the road. Most of this hydrogen economy idea is to eliminate burning of gasoline or diesel and eliminate emissions from cars. But the net gain is less than efficient.
I think one of the big real roadblocks to this, so to speak, Mickey, is the idea. I mean, let's face it, if they're going to have all of these hydrogen powered vehicles all over the place, you're talking about a massive change in terms of the infrastructure that you need in order to support those hydrogen-powered vehicles, correct?
Well, your point's well taken there, but let's even start before that, and we've alluded to it. First, you got to produce the hydrogen. You got to generate it, and that's a net negative energy balance using all commercial methods. And vehicles, for instance, require 0.59 pure. I mean, 0.59 pure is more pure than the gold bars you buy, 99.999% pure, and so most commercial applications are not that pure. So to get byproducts of hydrogen, you've got to process all this natural gas or oil or coal. Now that's done, but we use all this hydrogen for other things. Then you have a storage problem because for vehicles, it's got to be either pressurized or liquefied. You can't be carrying, it's very low density, so you've got to compress it, basically, or liquefy it to put it in a vehicle. You've got a weight problem then, and this process of liquefying, pressurizing, and or liquefying is very energy intensive. And the other problem is containing it, because hydrogen is the smallest atom on the planet, or in the universe, actually. So it diffuses through metals, and it causes metals to get brittle. So you've got to coat them with other things. Then, as you've alluded to, you've got this tremendous infrastructure cost to build pipelines, which have to be insulated. You would have to build filling stations in populated areas. Distribute it through tank trucks or as much as we do nat gas now in tanker trucks for remote areas. And, getting hydrogen to individual customers is just quite problematic. And really, it comes down to cost.
Yeah, and, you know, this has been talked about for quite a long time, Mickey, and it's made very slow progress. Case in point, I believe in 2004, the state of California announced plans to build up to 200 hydrogen fueling stations. Apparently just fewer than 30 exist today. Germany, you know, it's looking to have maybe 50 of these stations in place by 2016, but of course that will not even come close to national coverage in Germany. So, they are being put in place, but at a snail's pace.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the answer. I mean, it makes sense for something. Does not particularly make sense, even for fuel cells, which, there are two types of vehicles, but, they're just really not very efficient. And so despite these efforts, Iceland has committed by 2050 to have a hydrogen economy, but they have an advantage because they generate all their electricity through geothermal.
Geothermal.
They take this, they can take excess electricity and do electrolysis and generate hydrogen.
Mm-hmm.
There's been hydrogen buses, programs very heavily government subsidized in TID cities in Europe and China and Australia. In fact, Vancouver tried it for the 2010...
The Winter Olympics.
2010 Olympics, Winter Olympics.
Yep.
And they retired all those buses because they were so expensive to operate.
Yeah, I read that, yeah.
Yep, and so then you've got some ideas on government-subsidized wind hydrogen plants. So when you have excess wind, use that electricity to convert water to hydrogen, or to and those experiments, pilot plants, are operational in places like Colorado and Norway.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever been to Newfoundland and Labrador, the wind blows pretty, so they're doing it out there. Mm-hmm. But all in all, you know, it's probably the least efficient and the most expensive option to replace gasoline vehicles.
Yeah. Moving away from vehicles, all what you have stated, though, has not prevented some governments from moving fairly aggressively in this direction. Mickey, Japan, for example, I believe is quite aggressive in this area. And moving away from vehicles, it's talking about powering your homes. They're talking about more than 5 million homes having fuel cells in place by 2030. Whether or not that's going to really catch on, I don't know. Other uses, of course, include things like forklifts. There are fuel cell powered forklifts.
Yeah, so it has niche uses. And there's no doubt that we can. It becomes part of the energy equation. But the idea of a hydrogen economy, in my opinion, is just hyperbole. It's not going to happen in my lifetime, and it's probably not going to happen in your children's lifetimes.
Okay. Is there an investing angle to this, Mickey? I know there are fuel cell makers out there that are publicly traded on the stock market. Would you consider them?
No, just like I wouldn't consider Elon Musk and his Tesla with the idea he's going to build a 500,000 cars by 2020. I just don't buy it. Especially when I pull up the pump in Albuquerque this week and gas is $1.79 a gallon.
That's pretty darn good, isn't it?
Not bad.
Not bad. Okay, well, I hear the Surf Lords in the background, Mickey, right now with Shark Attack, so let's wrap it up there. What do you want to talk about next time out?
Well, I've been writing about gold lately, and we're going to review the gold market, and as I look right now, it's hit right at its, five-and-a-half-year low, and we're going to discuss where we think it's going to go from here.
Okay, great stuff. Talk to you in a couple of weeks, Mickey.
All right, thanks a lot, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com, and you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.